The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, not too bad. Thank you. Of course, fast day today. So a lot of people are observing the fast. But on this fast day, I found an interesting statistic that says that Israelis consume on average 4 kilograms of coffee a year.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I was kind of trying to work it out. Like, how would you divide that up on a daily basis? You know, 4 kilograms of coffee. Do you think that's a lot, Howard? Are you a coffee drinker?
I don't know. Yeah. What your answer to that?
Guzzler.
Does Nati say I'm a guzzler? I think that's a little rude.
But you mainstream.
Exactly. I've got a line. No, so I do drink a fair amount of coffee.
Okay, so 4 kilograms for you is probably just like on a monthly basis.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Wow, that's incredible. Really amazing. Yeah. Today is that fast. It is a fast. What is the significance of the fast today in the calendar?
So this is one of the so-called minor fast days in the calendar. And it's actually one of 4 fast days in our calendar that are related to events surrounding the destruction of the temple. We've got the of course, Tisha B'Av, which is a full fast. We've got the fast of Gedaliah, which has some significance. We've got, of course, today, which is the 10th of Tevet. And we've got the 17th of Tammuz, which comes just before Tisha B'Av. But, of course, the fast day of 10th of Tevet is really around the destruction of the first temple and the fact that this is the day that the so-called siege of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar took place. And so it's a mourning day because ultimately that's a siege that resulted in the destruction of Solomon's temple. So that is the reason why we mark this day, which comes only a week or so after Hanukkah. But I think one of the more interesting aspects of the fast day of the 10th of Tevet is that it has been designated as the Yom Kaddish Klali by the Chief Rabbinate of Israel. And the Yom Kaddish Klali is the general day of Kaddish. And that really is to commemorate those people whose date of death is unknown. If you want to keep your sight, or you want to say Kaddish for somebody and you don't know what the date of their death is, which is normally the memorial day, then this is the day that's been designated for you to use. And of course, it relates very broadly to so many of those people who died during the period of the Shoah. This was a day that was designated by the Chief Rabbinate back in the 1950s. So it's not a new phenomenon at all. But it is a day that's used for people to say Kaddish when they don't know the date of their ancestor's death. And this is becoming more and more relevant in the period that we're going into now, where fewer and fewer people actually are saying Kaddish for those who died during the Shoah. In other words, not only are the survivors dying out, but even the next generation now, those people who would be saying Kaddish for people who died during the Shoah, they are also slowly but surely dying away. And so therefore, it's becoming more and more relevant for us as a community to keep a day like this as a general day of Kaddish. And so the question is asked why we don't use Yom HaShoah, for example, which is designated in the Hebrew calendar. And I do know a lot of people who use Yom Kippur, actually, as a day to say Kaddish for somebody whose date of death was unknown. So that's also a practice that we've seen adopted. But the real question is, why don't we do this on Yom HaShoah, which comes, as many people will know, just after Pesach? And the reason that the rabbinate decided not to use Yom HaShoah is simply because that falls within the month of Nisan. And the month of Nisan is traditionally not a month for mourning. In other words, actually is a prohibition around mourning rituals during the month of Nisan. You're not supposed to make eulogies for people who died during that month. And so mourning is really very, very limited in the month of Nisan. And so it would be quite unusual to designate a day within the month of Nisan as being a general memorial day when mourning in principle is not allowed during Nisan or is not practiced. So that is the reason why the rabbinate chose this day, the Asara B'Tevet, the day of the fast day of the 10th of Tevet. And many people actually do use it and commemorate it. And of course, during services in shuls and things like that. Memorial prayers are said.
Well, fascinating, because we were having a discussion last night, and it's incredible how little knowledge we really have around some of these fast days. So thank you for that. This story I've been following for a while, and it's actually a concern, not only because of what's going on in Israel, but because this we will follow in whatever starts in the Northern Hemisphere, and that is this year's harsh flu. Israel is suffering from a particularly harsh outbreak of a flu. Is it worse this year?
Well, there are different reports suggesting different things, and the latest health report that has come out from the Public Health Association is saying that actually the flu, they're calling it an epidemic. I'm not sure if we're really in an epidemic situation, because I know that epidemic is something that's very specifically defined, but according to this flu, an epidemic, and they're saying that this is the worst flu epidemic that we have had in the last 10 years. Now, I read an article just about a week or two ago, which said that, in fact, this was not the case, and that this flu was no worse than last year. But in the most recent article that I've read and the statistics that I've seen, would you believe that 19 people have already died from complications relating to flu? And amongst those 19, three of them were actually children. So this is a very unusual situation. And so therefore, a lot of focus goes on to what types of flu we're suffering this year, what are the strains of flu, and also the whole issue of vaccinations. And we've spoken about vaccinations in the past. So I'm told that the most dominant strain of flu that we're seeing in Israel is actually the swine flu. And that seems unusual to me, because this is already not a new strain and this is not a new thing. And so therefore I would have expected that any vaccinations that are available and people are taking would actually prevent people from contracting swine flu.
So we spoke to a physician last year around this issue of swine flu. We just use a generic name, swine flu. That's what we now do. But it has got a very, very specific component, if I remember the interview. Zanati helped me remember that interview about swine flu. And in fact, it changes every year. So you do have
different strains.
Yeah, so you do have to have the vaccination every year. And we certainly, ahead of winter, we're certainly going to give as much information to our listeners as possible around this, because given what is happening in Israel and the aggressiveness of the strain this year that you guys are experiencing, I think it would be very wise to make sure that we protect it against it.
Absolutely. And I mean, there is a program in Israel for vaccinating people, particularly those who are at high risk. And apparently something like almost 2 million people were vaccinated against flu this year, which is only about 22% of the population. But apparently that's still a 4% increase over the number of people who were vaccinated last year. And there was a lot of controversy around the vaccinations, because in the first instance, the vaccinations, which are all imported from abroad, arrived late. Apparently, they were still developing some of the vaccinations quite late in the summer and early into the winter period. So the vaccinations only arrived in Israel very, very late. And then when people began to get vaccinated, they ran out of vaccines. And it's not clear whether the health authorities intend at this late stage of the day still to be acquiring new vaccine or additional vaccines. But we're still finding a lot of people who wish to be vaccinated are actually not able to be vaccinated because the vaccines have simply run out, which is, of course, not a good situation and therefore exposes people to illnesses. But, of course, you know, Howard, we've had this discussion in the past about vaccinations and how different people view vaccinations. There are a lot of misinformation about whether vaccinations are in fact dangerous or not dangerous, whether they're desirable or not desirable. But certainly the word on the street in Israel is that people should be vaccinated as much as possible, particularly people in high-risk categories. Mm-hmm. Apparently the vaccination rate amongst what they call elderly people over the age of 65, So I'm using that very, very carefully indeed, is about 58% of people over the age of 65 are vaccinated. And I think that that's exactly what one would like to hear, because that obviously is a much higher risk group. And of course, people with serious illnesses and things like that also. Unfortunately, however, with everything that's gone on, people are being really taking ill with flu, and I've certainly come across quite a number of people who've become quite ill with the flu, and it really knocks people out. You know, people have been ill for a week or two with temperatures and with really nasty symptoms. And one can see how that can very quickly degenerate into something more serious, to involve, respiratory diseases and things like that. And even amongst, children. So that's a very, very unusual situation. But we'll have to just see how this transpires and whether the health authorities decide, whether they decide to get more vaccine or not. Because even at this stage of the winter, I would suggest that it probably would be helpful to vaccinate as many people as possible, even if, you know, most of the flu is already out and about. So a pretty serious situation with the flu at the moment. And, yeah, I just mirror your view, Howard, that, you know, for particularly for people who are traveling backwards and forwards or exposed to people traveling to the Northern Hemisphere during this time of year, it would be sensible to be vaccinated before your winter comes along. Right.
Anthony, the High Court of Justice will today consider a petition as to whether the rabbinate should be forced to issue a kashrut license to a restaurant in spite of it being opened on Shabbat. What is the basis for the petition?
So there is a lot of controversy around places which are kosher and actually do keep Shabbat, but wish to open their doors to allow people to come and eat there on Shabbat. Now, on the face of it, that kind of sounds okay, right? I mean, we all have to eat on Shabbat, even people who keep Shabbat very strictly. And so the question is, why should we not be entitled to go to a restaurant and eat there, particularly if the proprietors have agreed that they will observe Shabbat very strictly? So what does that mean? Well, it means obviously preparing the food ahead of time. And in the most part, that also means getting people to order ahead of time. So the idea is that people will be in contact with the restaurant, either online or whichever way they are. They will place their orders before Shabbat. The restaurant will then prepare food according to the orders that have been placed, and probably a little bit more of that same food in order to accommodate people who choose to walk in on Shabbat and haven't pre-placed their orders. And then we'll take payment either before or afterwards. So there is no obvious transgression of the rules of Shabbat in that particular establishment. And so this restaurant that has been denied a kashrut license is petitioning the High Court. And it's saying to the High Court that hotels are not in any different situation, and hotels do have kashrut licenses, and they have people who oversee the kashrut on behalf of the rabbinate at the hotel, and that residents of the hotel need to eat on Shabbat, and of course they do so in a kosher manner. And so the rabbinate has responded saying that it doesn't give kashrut license to kosher restaurants on Shabbat, even if they do not violate Shabbat, because of the whole issue of supervision. Whereas in a hotel, the supervisor can stay at the hotel and doesn't need to find his way there in order to supervise the kashrut. In a restaurant, it's slightly different. The supervisor will need to get there, and the supervisor will, you know, it's not as convenient for that supervisor, who obviously will also be observing Shabbat, to oversee the kashrut at that particular place. And so therefore there is a greater possibility of things not going quite according to plan. And of course there is closer supervision that's needed on Shabbat. So this is obviously controversial. It sounds to me as if the rabbinate is kind of denying the license on the basis of technical reasons rather than because the establishment is not observant. And so I think we have a dilemma, a real contradiction here, where places really go out of their way to observe kashrut, the laws of kashrut, and to observe Shabbat at the same time, and yet generally are denied a license. They're not allowed to have a license even during days which are not Shabbat because of the fact that they are open on Shabbat. So I don't know what you think about this and what the listeners out there might think about this, but this is going to be an interesting discussion that will be held in the High Court of Justice today. And so let's see how that pans out and what the High Court decides on this issue.
Yeah, you know, when you think about this, and especially if they are adhering to the laws of Shabbat and they're not just open for business in the normal sense, then I really can't see on what basis the rabbinate, the rabbinut would withhold. And unfortunately, a lot of what comes out, or the rulings that come out of the rabbinate in Israel, sometimes, can be a bit problematic. So I am, to say the least. So I am very skeptical about some of their motivation for how they issue license, which is a horrible thing to say and a very sad state of affairs, but that just is what it is. In my view.
I mean, there are many establishments in Israel that do observe the laws of kashrut. In other words, the meat that they get is entirely kosher and they don't mix milk and meat. I mean, we get even some of the fast food joints, I don't know, Burger King and places like that, that, you know, do not have milk and meat, and they observe the laws of kashrut in every sense, except that they're open for usual business on Shabbat. So one can understand why, you know, the rabbinate would wish to deny them the license, although there are some people who say, well, you know, as long as you don't eat there on Shabbat or even on Saturday night or maybe even on Sunday morning where there's the risk that you might be eating food that was prepared on Shabbat, if you turn up there on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, for example, then there should be no real reason why you wouldn't eat there, in the same as some people choose to drink coffee at a restaurant that's entirely not kosher, but you'll drink it in a throwaway cup, and you'll watch that they don't touch it with whatever utensils might have come into contact with meat, whatever. But, you know, there are different levels and different controversies that surround this. But I'm interested to see how the court will rule on this matter today, and whether the rabbinate might not be forced to do what they've been reluctant to do all these years.
Certainly, we'll follow that up with you tomorrow. We are slightly late for news. Anthony Wright, thank you as always. It is 8:02. Apologies for your news being late.